I'd like you guys all to welcome Carl Wirth here for making the GNU do its job. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Okay, and I'm microphoned. Excellent. All right, welcome. My name is Carl Wirth. I work for Intel. I work on Linux graphics drivers. And I started the Cairo Graphics Library some number of years ago. And this talk is going to touch on some of some work that's come out of that. What this talk isn't about is anything that I've done. So we want to get that disclaimer out right away. Keith Packard seems to have been on a hiring spree. Every time he could find someone doing interesting work on graphics, he's hired them up. So this is the team he's put together at Intel, and basically the talk I'm giving today is all the work that they've done in the last year. Well, I've done not much. So, okay. Also, Jonathan Corbett made a promise that this would be an interesting talk to come to learn about some of the interesting kernel developments. Well, this isn't going to be a kernel talk. So if you came to find out about kernel stuff in graphics, all I have to say is that stuff's pretty much done. Keith Packard, over the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, kept coming to LCA saying, oh, we're going to fix X, we're going to fix X, we're going to push stuff into the kernel, we're going to make it all a great, we're going to re-engineer the whole system and it's going to be great. And basically all that work is done. That's already happened. So if you came for a kernel talk, go somewhere else. The kernel stuff is kernel mode setting, and what's the fact that the X server is not actually frobbing your PCI card to set up the mode, but the kernel is aware of that. The X server simply has to ask it to do something. And the GEM kernel memory manager. We will talk a little bit about some of the benefits that GEM gives us, so I'll touch on that a little bit later. Okay. So mostly what this talk is about is trying to get to something shiny. That's what graphics guys like. We get attracted to the shiny bits. So what we're going to talk about is, I'm going to talk about 2D graphics, and specifically efforts to get 2D graphics accelerated on the GPU. So let me talk a little bit about what 2D graphics, what I mean when I say 2D graphics. I'm talking about, you know, what's probably on the display of all of the laptops in the room right now. I mean, if you look at your laptop, you're probably seeing a bunch of text, maybe an email program, maybe a web browser. There's probably some images as well, and those images probably aren't moving. Well, okay, there is this one case, people watch YouTube or something like that, and there are some moving graphics, and that still counts too. So we've got text, we've got static images, we've got some video. Other than video, though, there's not a lot that moves around. Most things are pretty fixed. An interesting thing, if you look at the low-level operations and you compare 2D to 3D, 2D consists of a lot of really small operations. We draw like a glyph, the letter A, and it's maybe 10 by 10 pixels, and we want to display that. Then we want to draw the next character. 3D graphics, on the other hand, work very different than that. 3D graphics, they do some overhead to set up a bunch of state. Say, this is the 3D transformation I want, this is the lighting I want, these are the textures I'm going to use, and then they send a huge stream of vertex data as a single operation. So that the cost of that, the overhead to do that state setup is pretty minimal over the cost of this huge operation. But that's very different than what we have in 2D. Okay, now I'm going to tell you a little bit about someone named Ivan Sutherland. Ivan Sutherland is really one of the absolute pioneers, the person who probably invented computer graphics. So this is a picture of him in 1963 at MIT using a TX2 computer and a project that he called that was the Sketchpad project. This is probably the first ever graphical user interface, the first use of computer graphics. The fact that, we have these computation machines, what if we use them to make things to look at. That was a totally novel idea. And the reason I bring up Ivan Sutherland is there's a paper he wrote with T.H. Meyer, and I don't even know Meyer's name. It's funny how everyone knows Sutherland. Sutherland went on with another man, Evans, and they founded a company called Evans and Sutherland that still today does space or sort of flight training simulators for the military and things like that, and for commercial flight training. Anyway, So Meyer and Sutherland, in 1968, wrote a paper that they had noticed a very interesting thing that happened. This was on the PDP-1, where they were doing some graphics. And the PDP-1, you could write an X and a Y value into a register. You could send a plot command, and then this one phosphor, you know, this bob of phosphor at the X, Y location you'd get given would light up. And if you ran a tight enough loop and you loaded another X, Y spot, you could light up another one. And you could do several of these, and if the processor wasn't doing anything else, you could come back to the beginning and start over again and light up the first dot before the phosphor had quite faded, and you could actually achieve a static image. Well, that was a pretty cool thing. This was pretty impressive to do on the PDP-1. The problem was that really took all of your CPU just to try to have a single sort of image, just a few dots, all staying statically on the screen. Well, you'd actually want the CPU to actually be doing something, like computing what image to show up. And so if it went off and computed anything, your image fades and you can't see anything. Well, okay, so this general-purpose processor just wasn't fast enough. So the answer was to create a coprocessor. And the coprocessor had direct access to memory. The CPU could load up a whole list of locations, and this special-purpose coprocessor would loop through those, and it could just sit there in a tight loop displaying them. Well, that was pretty cool. Now we could have a static image while the CPU went off and computed other things. Well, as this coprocessor was now there, further things, they wanted to add further and further things. They eventually added the ability to chain one list of coordinates in one piece of memory to another list of coordinates in another chunk of memory so that you could set up several and it would march through them. Then they added conditional things so that you could conditionally display something or not. And then the CPU was doing all this arithmetic to actually compute what X and Y locations. They started putting some arithmetic features into the GPU. And so this graphics processing unit got more and more functionality until the point that it started doing all this computation, and they found after a while that the GPU was so busy doing computation that it couldn't keep up with the display lists and the image would start fading. So they needed to have a new coprocessor to sit alongside that one. Well, this isn't a really good chain of events, that you come up with a coprocessor, it grows up until it's too slow, and then you make a coprocessor for the coprocessor. Well, we don't want that kind of recursion in our hardware design. So the answer was the solution that broke this cycle, this reincarnation, was to take this coprocessor and realize, oh, it's not a special purpose processor anymore. It's now another general purpose processor. And wait a second, why are we maintaining two general-purpose processors next to each other? It'd make a lot more sense to fold this thing back in, and then we can start over with a really simple special-purpose coprocessor. The interesting thing about this cycle is that it didn't happen just a single time on the PDP-1 in 1968. It's happened several times since, and it doesn't happen only in graphics. The exact same thing happens in print hardware, in network hardware, whatever fields you're in, you can probably identify this same wheel of reincarnation where something is spun off as special purpose hardware and eventually grows to the point where it gets folded back into the CPU. So it's interesting to look at that cycle and think, where are we today? And I don't have a slide to talk about that. We have graphics processing units that are running separate from the CPU. They are... A few years ago, they were very fixed purpose. They had a fixed function pipeline. They do this three. They were all set up to do 3D geometry, and that's what they did. And if you wanted to do something else on them, it was pretty hard. Today's GPUs have grown in a lot of functionality. Now they are very programmable, very general purpose processors. So we're sort of late in that cycle where the GPU, this coprocessor, has grown to have a lot of functionality and is starting to look very much like a general purpose processor. This is an interesting thing to notice. It leads for a lot of possibilities. I mean, people are doing GPU projects where they're doing general purpose GPU, actually doing computation or cryptography or whatever else, because this coprocessor happens to be a really nice general purpose processor that you can program to do a lot of things. So since it's not a fixed purpose 3D processing engine anymore, we would like to do some 2D on there. So now let me talk about that's a little bit about the hardware and how it looks. Let me talk a little bit now about what our software stack looks like for doing 2D graphics. So here's sort of what a typical stack looks like. You'll start with a 2D application, maybe Firefox or Events, your PDF viewer. It's going to talk, in many cases, to Cairo. The two I mentioned before do, Firefox and Events and other applications. Cairo is this user space 2D graphics library for rendering things. Cairo, in turn, on most of the applications people are running on their laptops today, will talk to the X server over what's called the render protocol to ask the X server to do the graphics. The X server has a driver, and that driver talks to the Linux kernel, uses the GRAM, the gem, memory manager, and of course the kernel is then talking directly to the GPU. So that's sort of the stack from application down to GPU and the way things work for 2D applications. 3D has a similar stack, but it's sort of off to the side. We have a 3D application here, and it's talking to an implementation of the OpenGL specification. And in our free software world, that implementation is named Mesa. That's our implementation of OpenGL. And then Mesa talks to the same kernel and the same memory manager and of course, the same GPU. Well, what this means for us, and when I say us, I mean the graphics team at Intel, periodically, Intel hardware designers come to us and they say, we've designed a new GPU for you. Here you go. And our job is to write a graphics driver such that this thing, this new GPU, can be used on Linux systems. Today, that means we get to write one driver for the 2D stack that lives inside the X server and a separate driver that lives inside the Mesa implementation for 3D. And there's a lot of redundancy there, but it's not shared at all. And that's kind of frustrating and difficult for us. We think our lives would be easier if we could do less code. So that's something we'd like to change. The other problem is that for 2D, things just aren't going fast enough right now. And, well, I don't know. A lot of you might say, well, things are fast enough. I can browse the web. I can scroll my web browser. What's the big deal? One of the negative, sometimes, you know, there's specific applications that are running slow. A lot of things are going fast enough. But even if things are fast enough, if we could offload more to the GPU, the CPU could go idle more often, and we'd save power. And for laptops and traveling and conferences, you know, better power is always, better power usage is nice. Our laptops can last longer. And I talked about, yeah, we don't like writing two drivers. So, that story was pretty much the same as what I talked about last year at LCI. I said, we have this problem, we have two different drivers, we want to make everything go faster. And now is when I'm going to start talking about something new. Chris Wilson, over the last year, has done a fantastic thing to allow us to do measurement, so we actually know how fast or how slow things are. So what we used to do is we have a test suite inside of Cairo, and we would write little micro benchmarks where I'd say, well, one of the things you do with Cairo is to draw circles. So I draw a bunch of circles, and we time them and see how fast they go. And another thing we do is we draw gradients. So let's render a whole bunch of gradients over and over. So we do these, pick a tiny little operation, run it 1,000 times, time it, see how long it takes. And so sometimes we'd have an idea. We'd say, oh, I bet gradients should be faster because Inkscape is drawing lots of gradients, and we want that to go faster. So we'd write some code, and we'd test it on the little micro benchmark. We'd say, oh, gradients are 20% faster. Isn't that cool? And then we'd maybe try an application and say, well, it doesn't seem any faster. Maybe gradients weren't as important as we thought. So Chris decided that it was foolish of us to be running these synthetic micro benchmarks when what we actually cared about was applications. So he wrote something new, which is called Cairo Trace, and this is available in 1.9 snapshots. We'll have a 1.10 release of Cairo out soon, we hope. And it uses LD library paths, so all that you have to do is, once you've installed Cairo 1.9, you just say Cairo Trace and then my application. As long as the application is rendering with Cairo, every Cairo rendering operation will be captured into a log file. And that log file is capable of later being replayed. So we have another tool called Cairo Perf Trace, which will take a trace that was created with the Cairo Trace tool and replay it. Cairo Perf Trace is interesting because when you run your original application, you might be targeting the xlib backend. And then we have several other experimental backends for Cairo, and which I'll talk about in a little bit, ChiroPerf trace is capable of replaying the same trace on all of the different backends. And you could actually, usually this, you don't see anything, it's rendering to off-screen memory, but you can actually watch it draw. It's kind of interesting, because so what you do is you might run ChiroTrace, Firefox, and then you might browse to some of your favorite websites, scroll around, catch up on your Twitter feed, do whatever you do with Firefox, and then close it, and now you have this trace. And you can run ChiroPerf trace, and you can replay, and it just draws everything you did as fast as possible. It doesn't slow down. It just runs it all as fast as possible and times it to see how long it takes. And Chris Wilson has done this with several interesting applications that do all of the rendering with Cairo. He's done it with Firefox, with Poplar, with SwiftDeck, GNOME Terminal, Epiphany, Evolution, GNOME System Monitor. And he's always on the lookout for other interesting applications. Recently, someone wrote a... What's that? Inkscape. Inkscape would be great. It's not rendering all its graphics with Cairo right now. It does PDF export with Cairo. So... one of the OpenStreetMap project has someone recently made a web service called MapOSmatic. It's entirely free software. It's a very interesting application. You specify a city, and it generates a street map, a two-sided map. On the front, it's got the city and the streets and the grid, and on the back, it's got an index with the street names and the grid coordinates. It's really cool. And you can just type in any city, and it just spits it out at you. Well, it's using Cairo to do that, and it does that to PDF. And so I guess we could, with the same, we could capture a trace of Inkscape's PDF saving. So recently we added a MapOSmatic trace to our Cairo Traces collection. So this is a Git repository. Anyone can check it out. We've got it split up into two pieces. One is the full suite, and inside of full, Chris might have run an application for 2 or 3 minutes browsing around for a while. We have another one that's called the benchmark suite, where every trace he took those same traces and cut them down so that they should only take about 10 to 30 seconds each, so that you can actually get through the whole thing in a reasonable amount of time. The idea being, you might use the benchmark traces in daily testing, and maybe you use the full suite in less frequent testing, just before release or something like that, or on a monthly basis. So this is a new thing that I think is really compelling and really interesting. Now what happens is, when we have an idea of, oh, maybe we need to change the size of our glyph caches, maybe that would help rendering. After we implement that idea, we can say, oh, that makes Firefox rendering 15% faster, which was a lot better than saying, what we could say before is, maybe gradients go faster, and I don't know if that has any impact on applications. So we actually know now if we have what impact our changes have on applications. So I'm going to show some graphs now. These were all captured with the tool I just described, ChiroPerf Trace, on the Cairo Trace's benchmarks that we've collected. The green bars in this case are Cairo's image backend. This is an entirely software backend. It renders everything on the CPU. The yellow-orange, I don't know what color it shows up as there, is with Xlib. So this is drawing with the render protocol to the X server. And this is basically the code that you're getting right now if you're running any of these applications. If you're running Firefox or SwiftDeck to show a YouTube file, or Poplar, this is the performance you're getting. So you can see, in some cases, we actually already today are getting some benefit because of the GPU. Things actually happen faster. So this GVim trace came out about twice as fast. Some things are actually still slower. Poplar here rendering a PDF file is, you know, almost half as fast. And GNOME System Monitor drawing those little CPU graphs is for some reason very slow. It's only 25% the speed of just doing everything on the CPU. So it would actually, in some cases, it would actually be faster not to use the GPU with our current code. And the interesting question is, and you can see, yeah, even Evolution and Firefox with a synthetic set of SVG benchmarks is also suffering. The question is this a limitation of the GPU? Is this that we have a really bad drivers in inside the X server, that things are inefficient? It's hard to know. It can be a lot of things. And given any one of these traces, you can sit down with perf events and do a lot of investigation. And of course, we've been doing a lot of that. So a reminder of what I said before. The two big things we want to fix is that we want to get performance to be better, and we want to not have to write two drivers anymore, both a 2D and a 3D driver. We'd love to get to the place where we have a single driver. So one approach toward getting there is something called Cairo DRM. And this, again, is something that Chris Wilson and Christian Hogsberg have done primarily. In Cairo DRM, the idea is to get the X server completely out of the loop as far as 2D rendering. He takes the Cairo library and he says, when I want to draw something, don't ask the server over this render protocol, but instead talk directly to the GPU. Just use the direct rendering interfaces and assemble batches of GPU instructions and ship them off and just execute directly. To make this happen, what Chris started with was he took the driver out of the X server. He took the existing 2D driver, which was doing that, and put it inside Cairo, inside a new backend. And that backend is called Cairo DRM. And then after he had that in place, he started doing a bunch of optimization and improving it. And he's gotten to a point where we've learned some of what the GPU actually can do for 2D graphics. And that's what I can show in this next slide. Okay, I'm going to come back to that idea. So here are the results of Cairo DRM. So the green and orange bars are exactly the same as before. Everything's normalized here to comparing it to the image backend as one. And so, you know, this GVim case was the most impressive one before in Xlib. And so now you can see Cairo DRM has come along, and it's, up to 10 times faster for Firefox than Xlib. And that's a pretty interesting result. We think that's pretty cool, that we actually can, we now have a demonstration that we can use our GPU to make 2D graphics be a lot faster to actual real-world applications. And that's cool. We like that. But that's only one of our goals. Remember, I said we wanted to improve the performance problem, but we also wanted to get rid of this fact that every time a new GPU comes along, we have to write two drivers, a 2D driver in the X server and a 3D driver in Mesa. Well, Cairo DRM doesn't really help too much with that, because now we have to write three drivers. We have a 2D driver in the X server, we have a 3D driver in Mesa, and we have a driver inside of Cairo. Oh. The driver, of course, is entirely GPU specific. So when Chris Wilson originally did this work, it was on the Intel 915 graphics card. He later started some work on the 965, and Christian Hogsberg did a lot of work, continue that. So we have a pretty functional 965, and more recently they're starting to do some GM45, which is the chip I have in my card, my laptop here. It runs fairly well, but text ends up getting scrambled a lot. So, and that's only three Intel cards. There's a lot of other Intel cards, and then of course there's graphics cards from other people. So that's probably not the way we want to go forward. But the interesting thing it does give us, it does tell us the target we can shoot for. We know what the GPU is capable of with the application workloads that we care about and that we want to do. So, another option. If we want to get rid of having to write multiple drivers, well, we know we're not going to be able to get rid of writing a 3D driver. That's just a requirement. We have to implement OpenGL. That's a requirement for the graphics enablement that's our job to do. So if we have to write an OpenGL driver anyway, what if we took Cairo and had it talk to OpenGL? So now the advantage here is we wouldn't have any driver-specific, we wouldn't have graphics drivers inside of Cairo anymore. We'd have one layer where Cairo could talk to OpenGL, and then it's just a matter of having the drivers be fast enough inside there for everything to work. This sounds like a great plan, because we can get to write a lot less code, which is what we want to do. Some people may have heard of Glitz before as being a Cairo thing inside of an OpenGL-based thing inside of Cairo. This Cairo GL is pretty different than Glitz. Glitz was started many years ago by David Reifman, and what he did was he took the render interface that Cairo was talking to the X server, and he implemented that exact interface with OpenGL. It turns out the render interface isn't a great interface. It's not a good match for OpenGL. And it inherently has some problems. It also, being written several years ago, uses just the fixed function pipeline and doesn't take advantage of a shader capability that modern graphics cards have. So since that work on Glitz, Cairo has evolved quite a bit and has a higher level interface that's quite different than the render extension. And Cairo GL is able to hook into that higher level interface and is able to express the operations that Cairo wants to do in ways that are more suited to what OpenGL actually provides. So we have a lot of possibility with Cairo GL. We don't yet have an implementation that's very compelling. The Cairo GL, I said that one of the drawbacks of Glitz is that it's entirely fixed function. Well, Cairo GL right now is pretty much fixed. The implementation we have so far is fixed function. In the last couple of weeks, someone showed up on the Cairo mailing list and said, here's a bunch of code that rewrites Cairo GL to use shaders on the GPU. So that code looks really exciting. I tried running it this week, and it doesn't run for me yet. It compiles, but it doesn't run. Once we get that working, we should get some interesting performance benefits from it. In the meantime, Cairo GL results are not something to jump up and down about. That's where we're at right now with the current Cairo GL code. I would have loved to show those bars all the way over at the right, because then we'd be where we want to be. So the yellow bars, fast graphics. The blue bars, one driver. So we want to get to solve both of those problems at the same time, and we're going to get there. The really cool thing about this is that Cairo DRM shows that it's possible and it's demonstrable. We can look at it and measure it and figure out what's going on. There's no reason that GL shouldn't be every bit as fast as Cairo DRM. So we have a pretty clear roadmap in front of us. How am I doing? Question? Do we have a microphone? Maybe not. I'll repeat. I'm even having trouble hearing you, so we're going to just wait for that microphone to catch up to you. Did you want the context of the graph to talk about this?
Considering the workload, you've got some applications that still work better with just Cairo image. Are you aiming to get all applications to perform better, or are you going to have something, so hints or something, saying this works better with old rendering model or something?
No, yeah, that's a good point. There are some, and even dramatically, it's easy. Steven's not letting me bowl him over with statistics here. It's easy to see those big yellow bars and say, "Wow, Cairo DRM is great." But he noticed that down at the bottom we're less than half the speed of the image backend in certain cases. And those are mostly just bugs that we just need to fix. It's just not done. This is what it is today. But yeah, we want to get to the point where across the board everything is faster with the GPU. I mean, the funny thing is, today what you're actually running, like I said, is Cairo Xlib in a lot of cases, and in almost every case. And you can see Firefox workloads where Cairo Xlib is half the speed of just using the image backend. So the sad fact is, for certain applications today, it's a big performance win to just go in and switch them from using Cairo Xlib and the X server to simply using the image backend, rendering everything in software, and pushing the final result, to the backend. And these graphs are actually a couple of months old. I have some newer graphs, but I wanted the reason I chose some older ones is because they're the ones that I have all the measurements on for all these charts. But recently, the image backend has actually been sped up about 3x in many of these cases. So it's a fun little race we're having between the CPU and the GPU. Excellent question. Okay, I've been talking about Cairo. We talked about how we can measure Cairo applications, how we can get Cairo applications onto the GPU via Cairo DRM or Cairo GL. What about other applications, 2D applications, that are using the render protocol and not using Cairo? If we get Cairo all fixed, where are we left with those? Because I said that we want to switch Cairo GL one of the advantages of having Cairo GL would mean we wouldn't have to implement these X server drivers, except that we'd still do have applications talking to X. One notable case of this is Qt applications, Qt applications, talk directly on the render protocol. So one option for fixing those, I didn't mention this on the slide, is to just fix those applications to talk to Cairo instead of talking directly to render. I guess that falls under that first bullet where I said punt them all the software. We could just throw out the drivers from the X server and have the X server talk directly, just do a software implementation, which would make them so horribly slow that everyone would be motivated to stop talking to render. Another option, one that Eric Anholt's been working on, a coworker of mine at Intel, is to switch the X server to talk to OpenGL. So just like this arc I have here coming out of Cairo, similarly we could have the X server going over and talking to OpenGL. So that's a project he's started called Glamour. He just hasn't had a lot of time to spend on that. He's gotten some results appearing on the screen and some things just appearing wrong. So that might be one approach to that. And the last approach that's kind of an interesting thought, kind of turns things on its head a little bit, is to take the X server and have it turn around and call Cairo to actually do its implementation. We just talked about how we could make the make Cairo fast by using OpenGL or DRM. What if then the X server uses it for its implementation? I guess we'd have to get Cairo off the X server before we put the X server on Cairo. Otherwise, we could send everyone into rendering loops. So those are some interesting ideas, and that's some future work to figure it out. Meanwhile, there are other applications that do use the GPU. Oh, we got another question here. Yeah, well, so if the X has a protocol that can talk, and it can talk over the network, a lot of people today are using X with so the question was, if we bypass the X server with our graphics, do we lose the ability to use X over the network? And the answer is, X, even in this kind of scenario, X wouldn't go away. We'd still be able to implement the X protocol. And for example, in this case, where the X server could talk to Cairo, that could still happen in an accelerated sense. And we have examples of that already with the accelerated indirect GLX work, where OpenGL, the X server directly uses direct rendering for OpenGL, and it already achieves a similar result. So there are already other applications and things that are using the GPU. We have video. I didn't talk about video much throughout the talk. Cairo doesn't have any direct video APIs, and it turns out it probably doesn't need any video APIs. People do have hardware that does hardware-assisted decode and even encode of video. Often that's not even the GPU. Often that's a separate video decode unit. It's a separate piece of silicon than either the CPU or the GPU. And it would certainly be nice to be able to take advantage of that video decode to, you know, take your MPEG stream or whatever codec it is, turn it into YUV, and then still render to that with Cairo and get it on presented and get your subtitles added and have all of that happen within a zero copy and very efficient GPU accelerated mechanism. And this is where the GEM graphics manager, the GEM memory manager inside the kernel is so interesting. It gives us a mechanism where we can name sections of video memory and share those names between even separate processes. And so we should be able to, integration with video decode should be quite simple to do. We've had a recent Hackfest where we had a GStreamer and X server and Cairo developers talking about how to do that and going forward. Hopefully we'll see some things come out of that soon. Similarly, if an application wants to talk to OpenGL directly, you want to be able to mix CairoGL and OpenGL calls directly. And again, we can do that kind of sharing. Beyond that, since I've talked about Cairo a bunch, what else might happen in Cairo? And where else might it need actual changes? All the changes I've talked about so far are below the application level, entirely opaque to the application. It just changes internal to Cairo. But we might actually want to make changes to Cairo itself in order to enable some GPU acceleration. We have an application like Inkscape. One of the difficulties Inkscape has when it looks at Cairo is SVG has these very complex filters that it provides. And so Inkscape right now looks at Cairo and says, well, Cairo doesn't give us any of that filter functionality as provided by SVG, so we have to implement that in software anyway. So if Cairo rendered to the GPU, we would have to pull it back out of the GPU to then apply our CPU software implementation. It would actually be slower. So we would like to provide a way to do that. If you look at Cairo, Cairo is really sort of a fixed function API. It doesn't allow any sort of programmability at the level of the GPU. So maybe it would make sense to take GLSL or a subset of GLSL, this is the OpenGL shader language, and pass that directly to Cairo. In order to do that, we'd need a lot of really interesting compiler technology. We'd need to be able to compile GLSL for the GPU. We'd also need to be able to compile GLSL for the CPU in case the GPU isn't available, or in case you're rendering your Cairo result to a PDF. You're probably not going to use your GPU to create that PDF, so we'd need a way to take that GLSL and still get the right result. So if you are somebody that knows a lot about compilers or know somebody who knows a lot about compilers, come talk to us. We'd be very interested in talking to you and getting some help on some of those things. I think that's all I have, so any questions I'd be glad to take. There's a roving microphone.
Questions?
I go first. Sorry. You said at some point in time, if the GPU does the work, the CPU can turn off and save more power. Is the GPU not using power, or is it just like a whole lot less?
Obviously, the GPU uses power, and that's something you want to manage well. It turns out that if you have if you can take advantage of special purpose instructions to do operations rather than implementing them in general purpose instructions. Hopefully, we could get by with fewer instructions and get by with less power. And we definitely have measured a lot of cases where we can get by with less power in the GPU. So yeah, obviously, it's not universal that I switched to the GPU, it's going to be less power. But we're hoping to get some benefit there. Another question.
This is sort of a comment, I guess, more than a question. But one thing I just wanted to emphasize is that applications that use GTK won't really be able to switch away from Cairo Xlib until the GTK theme rendering can be done in a way that doesn't require you to have an X-drawable, because the performance is going to be terrible. I mean, your traces don't show the theme rendering because for Firefox anyway, we're bypassing Cairo for that. So
right.
There's a fundamental problem that someone has to solve.
Yeah, it'd be nice if we didn't applications hadn't leaked out some of these interfaces that we're now trying to throw away. And GTK theme rendering is definitely one of those leaks that maybe GTK 3.0 will come along and fix that, and we can get all our theme rendering done with Cairo. So if anyone wants to tackle that job, that'd be great. If there's no other questions, we do have one.
Yeah, sorry, one over here. With Cairo, you support a number of different backends.
Yes.
Will we see any of these benefits for, in particular, things like the OS X backend or on the Windows backend or some of the other platforms? Because we have got the opportunity then of moving more and more open source GTK applications, making them available on those platforms in an effective manner. Yes, we want this to work well on Linux, but can we do anything on those other platforms?
That's an interesting question. The certainly Cairo GL actually will be the most interesting backend for cross-platform portability, cross-platform acceleration. Anything that in Xlib and the render interface is probably not going to be used on a Windows or OS X machine, but GL is probably available. And that's what we see as the most likely cross-platform acceleration capability. So that's where we'd like to get. Like I showed on the slide, we're not there yet, but we're hoping to get there. Anyway, thank you very much, and appreciate it.